Hi, friends. This is Brock Polk, and I want to thank you for downloading this sermon from Heritage Church of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. Our mission is to lead others to a thriving relationship with Jesus. And if you're ready to take a next step in your faith journey after you listen to this message, you can contact us through our website at www.heritagechurchofchrist.org. God bless you, and I hope you enjoy the following message.
Well, you made it. The third and final week that I'm going to be talking about money for a while, right? You may wonder to yourself, why did he choose to put a series on stewardship right before Easter? Why did he choose to put a series talking about finances that would even end on Palm Sunday? And if you asked me, I'd say it's because I'm not sure there's another part of our life that needs death and resurrection more than the way we manage God's resources. I think it's serious. And so we are finishing up today the three-week series that we have called Sinking. And we've been talking about the way that we handle our money, though I shouldn't say it that way, because the first thing we discovered in this series is that none of us has any money of our own. We're all just managing resources that belong to God. And the driving theme of this entire series has been that we ought to be managing God's resources the way that God would personally manage those resources if he had not entrusted them to us. I know that talking about money management is a sensitive issue. Most of us are pretty private about our income, our budget, and our bills. And I wonder if maybe you've wondered, why is God so concerned about this anyway? I mean, it's true that Jesus talked about money more than virtually any other subject. But why the interest? Why the repetition? Why was it so important that Jesus talked about money over and over again from dozens of different angles? Maybe you've wondered that. And you know, the more I study and the longer I meditate about it, I'm convinced that the reason Jesus talks about money so much is because he's concerned we might start to think wealth is the goal that we're supposed to be aiming for. Jesus is concerned that we might get the wrong priority in our mind. You see, Jesus recognized the captivating attraction that money can hold over the human heart. He knew how much we prioritize being comfortable. He knew how badly we crave being entertained and distracted. Jesus knew that human beings are ingrained with a gravitational pull toward wealth because we so easily equate money with security. But Jesus also knew that the gravitational pull of wealth leads to a dead end. It's like those mosquitoes that are flying toward the bug zapper, toward the light. Building our lives on the pursuit of wealth is a costly mistake because it ignores the reality of a future where you can't take it with you. But the fact is that this life is supposed to be all about getting ready for the life to come. God is trying to prepare us for something else. And that's one of the most important aspects of financial stewardship. You know, throughout this series, we have been using boat analogies to help us visualize the state of our stewardship. In week one, we talked about the glaring reality that way too many of the households in our community and even in our church are struggling financially to the point that they're sinking. Some of our families are sinking quickly. Some of us are slowly taking on water. Some of our families are aware that they are in financial trouble, while other families are blindly oblivious to the trouble they're in. But they're sinking. And last week, we talked about the unpleasant reality of consumer debt, which is the water that is sinking so many boats. It's like just like forgetting to put the drain plug in the boat before you launch leaves a boat vulnerable to filling up with water. allowing consumer debt with its high interest rates to continue to be a part of your financial life is a recipe for disaster. Our cultural habit of living above our means and spending money that we don't have is responsible for absurd levels of stress that we carry. It's responsible for many of the disagreements and the pressures that are wrecking marriages left and right, because we aren't availing ourselves of the opportunity to manage money God's way. But there are two more opportunities that we haven't talked about yet, and they are both being forfeited because of the financial stress that is so pervasive in our culture. The first of those two missed opportunities is the ability to help somebody else. Have you ever thought about this? If you are standing in a boat that is filling with water, and you see a swimmer in distress just a few yards away, there really isn't all that much you can do to help them out, because you're in your own predicament. Your heart may go out to them. You may wish you could do something, but you are in no position to help when you yourself are sinking too. And that's what it's like when you've dug yourself into a financial hole and you find out about a friend in need or a family who lost their home or a relative who needs expensive medical treatment, and your heart goes out to them and you want to help, but you're barely making ends meet yourself. And so it's hard to see how you could help meet their need too. It's just like they tell you on the airplane. You got to put on your own oxygen mask first. You got to stabilize your own situation before you can be of assistance to anyone else. And poor financial stewardship puts us in a position of being unable to help others the way that we ought to. But there's a second missed opportunity that we forfeit when we mismanage God's resources, and it's the opportunity to advance to another level of stewardship. You can think of situations in your own life where you've had to earn responsibility gradually, right? Where you had to prove that you were ready to handle the next stage of whatever you were learning to do. Remember when you learned how to drive? Chances are that the car was not the first vehicle that you ever steered on the pavement, right? You started maybe with a tricycle, and then you graduated to a bicycle, maybe with training wheels. And then maybe you drove a lawnmower or a tractor or a golf cart before you took on the responsibility of driving an automobile. Maybe you grew up in a family where shooting was a hobby that you enjoyed together, and you probably didn't start with a high-powered rifle or a shotgun. You probably started with your thumb and your finger. And then you moved to a rubber band gun or a cap gun. And then you moved maybe to a BB gun after that, or a Nerf gun in between. The same is true when you talk about boating. You can't just decide, hey, I want to go be a ship captain and go take a class and then walk onto a cruise ship or a cargo ship and take the wheel. You start small. You start with maybe a canoe or a kayak or a John boat, and you work your way up to motorized vessels, and you increase the size and the complexity as you gain experience and training. And the metaphor carries over to our financial stewardship as well. I suspect that most of us in this room have dreams of doing big things to make a difference in the world around us, right? We have a sense that there is something important we would like to be a part of. You might want to open a business. You might want to lead a nonprofit. You might want to quit your current career and dedicate your time to ministry, to a cause that has captured your heart's attention. You may be called to be a volunteer church leader. You may be feeling the call to go back to school to learn how to solve some pressing need that's facing our global community. You may dream of philanthropic work, being able to selectively choose causes and organizations and individuals to partner with and help them accomplish their mission. Big dreams like that are exciting, but the reality is most of us don't start off with those roles that we dream of. We don't begin as the leader or the director or the CEO or the big donor. We start off with an allowance and then a part-time job and then maybe an internship or an entry-level job and the meager paycheck that comes with it. You don't move to higher levels of responsibility until you demonstrate that you can handle your current level of responsibility. And that principle makes it much more important to manage the resources that you are entrusted with now responsibly. You see, I believe God's got dreams for you too. I believe God's got dreams of using each and every one of us to do important life-giving work that's going to bless the world. And I don't want us to miss the opportunities. I don't want us to miss out on the chance to be a part of what God has dreamed up for our lives. And I believe that a present commitment to good stewardship gives God the space and the confidence to trust us for important roles in the future. And so this morning, I want to focus on one more moment when Jesus talked about money. And I hope it's going to bring some clarity for all of us about what's important next. So if you've got a digital or a print Bible with you this morning, I'm going to ask you, if you would, to join me in the book of Luke, which is the third book in the New Testament portion of your Bible. You can even do this with the brand new Heritage app on your phone. So there's a plug for that right there. Luke is one of the sequential accounts of Jesus's ministry and his teaching during his life on earth. And Luke, who wrote the book, does not shy away from recounting Jesus' sayings and instructions about money, including the stories that we find in chapter 16. Now, I should tell you this morning that the story we are going to read together can be confusing, especially if you are reading it for the first time. Every week as I prepare for my sermon, my habit is to look at some scholarly resources to try to get the background on the text that we're working from. And this week, most of the articles and most of the resources that I read just had red bold letters that said, "Don't preach this." They said, this passage has really messed a lot of people up. And one of them said, "This passage is an interpretive hornet's nest, like stay away, 10-foot pole and all of that kind of thing." Now, the beauty of preaching from a passage like this is that if you disagree with the way I interpret this passage, we will both find plenty of support for our argument, and that's okay. But I'm going to take a stab at it this morning for our sake. And this passage is not confusing because it uses complicated language. It's not confusing because it has unfamiliar concepts. It's confusing because it sounds like Jesus is endorsing something that nobody who knows Jesus would expect him to endorse. And so we got to read careful. But stick with me, and I think you're going to find the purpose behind Jesus' weird story here. Now, this is a parable, which means that the story Jesus is going to tell is not based on true events. This is a hypothetical. It's like a fable that he used to teach an important lesson. And here's how it starts. Luke 16, verse 1. Jesus told this story to his disciples. Now, that's important. He's telling it to people who are following him. Okay? Tell this story to his disciples. There was a certain rich man who had a manager handling all of his affairs, handling his business dealings. And one day, the report came that the manager was wasting his employer's money. So the employer, the rich man, called the manager in and said, "What's this I hear about you? Get your report in order because you are going to be fired." Now, here's a guy that's in a bad spot. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's been wasting the employer's money on purpose. Maybe he's been doing it on accident. Maybe it was an ignorance thing. But either way, he's about to be unemployed. And it's more than just that. Thinking in the terms that we have been using during this series, here's a guy who has been a steward of someone else's resources, and now he has been put on notice that his assignment is coming to an end. He will no longer be entrusted with the resources that he was trusted with yesterday. It's time to clean out your desk. But the story says at that point in verse 3, the manager, the one who was being fired, thought to himself, now what? My boss has fired me. I don't have the strength to dig ditches. I'm too proud to beg. Now what? Ah, I know. I know how to ensure that I'll have plenty of friends who will give me a home when I'm fired. He says, I've got an idea, something I can do now that's going to help me out in the future, but I got to move quick. I got to act fast before I get fired. And so verse 5 says, so he invited each person who owed money to his employer to come and discuss the situation. He asked the first one, how much do you owe my boss? And the man replied, I owe him 800 gallons of olive oil. And so the manager told him, I tell you what, let me see that bill. He ripped it in half. Take the bill and quickly change it to 400 gallons. How much do you owe my employer? He asked the next debtor. I owe him 1,000 bushels of wheat, was the reply. Well, here, the manager said. Let's take the bill and we'll change that to 800 bushels. Now talk about wasting the rich man's money, right? In just two short back alley conversations, the manager just stuck it to the man big time. But that's not even the point. That wasn't even his goal. He was not trying to sabotage his boss. He wasn't trying to get even with his employer. He was trying to get ahead for his own future. And so he gave away a couple of favors. He gave some customers the employee discount. You can almost hear him thinking to himself, someday, and that day may never come, but I'll call upon you to do a service for me. But until that day, accept this discount as my gift to you on the last day of this job. Now, he did it without his boss's knowledge. He did it without his boss's approval. He just acted on his own because he decided he was going to use the influence he had left to pave the way for the moment when he had no influence left. He was stewarding the resources so that he'd be taken care of when he had no resources to steward. It's like copying your customer files before you leave the company. He was trying to make sure he had some contacts to reach out to when he needed help in the future. Now, it isn't ethical. And in our business world, it'd probably get you sued. It'd probably get you in a lot of trouble. But in this story, when the boss found out about it, you know what he thought? He said, I respect that. Verse 8 said, the rich man had to admire this dishonest rascal for being so shrewd. I mean, yes, the manager's actions cost the boss some income, but the boss understood why he did it. He respected the game. He might have done the same thing if the roles had been reversed. It doesn't mean he's okay with it. Doesn't mean he condones the manager's actions, but he recognizes the strategy. You got me there. Is what he thought to himself. And that's actually where a lot of people who read this story in Luke get tripped up. Because if you don't read with a discerning eye, you might come away from this story thinking that Jesus was condoning the manager's actions, that Jesus was encouraging his disciples to lie and cheat and steal in order to get ahead. You might think that's what this story is about. And if that's what Jesus was saying, that this parable would truly be out of character and it would not conform with the rest of Jesus' teachings. But Jesus is not condoning dishonesty here. He's trying to help righteous people learn a lesson from the inventiveness of unrighteous people. Which is what he mentions in the second half of verse 8. He says in the second half of the verse, he says, and it's true that the children of this world are more shrewd in dealing with the world around them than are the children of the light. Jesus is not trying to convince his disciples to be children of this world, but he wants them to learn something. He wants them to pick up a lesson here. And in the next verse, he makes it very clear. In fact, it starts out, he says, "Here's the lesson," which means listen up. When Jesus says, "Here's the lesson," it's like your school teacher saying, "Write this down because it's going to be on the quiz." He's spelling it out really clearly so that we will get the message. And Jesus says, use your worldly resources to benefit others and to make friends. And then, when your earthly possessions are gone, they will welcome you to an eternal home. Jesus is telling his disciples, he is telling us, that the best way to use your worldly resources is to strategically make sure you are ready for eternity. The dishonest manager in the story was using his temporary resources to get ready for the time when his job was gone. And Jesus is trying to convince us that the resources we control right now can be used to set the stage for a time when this life is over. He is rearranging our priorities for our money. And this is such an important insight because our natural inclination is to think that the money we have in this life is meant to provide for this life. That's what we think. That's what we assume. That's what everybody around us does. But Jesus has got a different target in mind. It reminds me of a financial tool that you may be aware of called a target date mutual fund. Some financial companies offer these mutual funds as a simple way to invest your money when you aren't personally well-versed in investing. And the idea is you invest in this one mutual fund that has a target date of the year when you'd like to retire. And the company will manage that fund and they will change appropriately the strategy over time with that target date in mind. The difference in Jesus' advice is that the target date is not set for when you're 59 and a half or 65 or 67. The target date is set for eternity. And it's a lot more important than your earthly retirement. And so Jesus wants us to get this priority right. And so he says, use your earthly resources to invest in the things that'll matter forever. The relationships, the service, the philanthropy, the mission of the church, and the people around you. Those are the things that are important to God. Those are the things that are important to the one who really owns our stuff. Those are the pursuits that God will praise us for prioritizing. Those are the investments that will make an eternal difference for you and for other people. Those are the kinds of projects that will change the course of history. And those are the very reasons that God has made you a manager of some of his resources. Because there's going to come a day when your earthly possessions are gone. And you'll have to answer to God for the investments you made with his resources. And Jesus died so that you could get to that day and say, "God, I spent my whole life preparing for this moment and this conversation. God, I spent my whole life trying to be ready for the day when you would ask me, how did you take care of my stuff? How did you take care of your community? How did you imitate me with the gifts that I entrusted to you?" Jesus wants us to be ready for that moment so that we can say, "God, I've been looking forward to having this talk with you. Let me tell you how I tried." That is what good stewardship looks like. Good stewardship is all about preparing for what's next. Good stewardship is all about realizing that this life is not all that there is, and that God is preparing us for something bigger, and so we invest to get ready for that day. And I love it, because after this story is over, I think Luke, who's writing this down, I think he just rolled through his memory bank and said, what else did Jesus say about money? Did I need to make sure that they read at this point? And so he reminded us of a few other sayings. Verse 10. If you are faithful in little things, you will be faithful in large ones. But if you're dishonest in little things, you won't be honest with greater responsibilities. And if you are untrustworthy about worldly wealth, then who will trust you with the true riches of heaven? And if you're not faithful with other people's things, why should you be trusted with things of your own? No one, nobody, no person can serve two masters. You'll either hate one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the first one and despise the other. And Jesus said, you cannot serve both God and money. You just can't do it. It's not possible to be a follower of Jesus if you are also constantly following your own wishes, your own desires, your own comfort, your own pleasure. You can't serve two masters. But what you can do is decide which one you're going to follow. You can choose that. You're in control of that. And we want to help you as you make that decision. And so I'm excited to tell you that even though we just finished up a session a couple of weeks ago, on April 30th, we're going to begin some new sessions of Financial Peace University here in our church. We're going to offer it at different times during the week. We're going to provide childcare. We're going to try to get all of the obstacles out of the way. But the question is, are you ready? Are you ready to say, I want to do this differently? I want to manage God's resources God's way, and I need help to figure out how to do that. There's a lot of other tools you could use. This is not the only thing that's out there, but it's something that we've used at our church for a long time, and we believe the principles will help you to honor God with the resources that God has honored you with. And so I want to encourage you on April 30th and that subsequent week to decide, I'm going to participate in FPU. I'm going to go and find out how I need to make change, how I could bring my pocketbook under the lordship of Jesus Christ. I want to find out how I can say no to serving money and in turn serving myself. And find out how I can say yes to serving God with every part of my being. That's the next step. The invitation is for you to choose. Which master are you going to serve?